What's up, guys? Hope this message finds you well. This is Tomas here. Thanks so much for tuning in to my podcast, The Tomas Show. Today, my guest is Herbert Bigvand, a CEO at Surfboard. It's a geolocation app, a platform that allows you to explore your community. I have been very, very impressed with Herbert ever since I met him. He's a bright, bright young man with a mission to really deliver a lot of value, not only to our community, but nationally and overseas, internationally. And we'll dive into a lot of great things, including his inspirational story, how he got to America from Iran at the age of 16 with $300 in his pocket. Hope you guys enjoy as much as we did. Let us know what you think. Cheers.
This is the Tomas Show, your source for personal and professional development.
Welcome to another episode of the Tomas Show. Today, I have the privilege to sit down with a good friend. We had a pleasure to develop a relationship, I would say the last 6 months, maybe even a year now. And I was always, always very impressed with him ever since I met him. And we're going to dive in depth into his story and what he does on a daily basis. But I want to first and foremost welcome Herbert Bigvand.
Yes. Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
And I'm giving myself credit because I know how to pronounce your last name. We are fellow foreigners here. And I think, is it tough? It's pretty tough probably sometimes, right? For people to pronounce.
Yeah. I get away with the last name. The last name everyone says is fine. But the first name. Yeah, I hear different pronunciations.
Well, I feel like I'm on the same boat. People always misspell or mispronounce. So I feel like it's just, the nature of the immigrant.
But, yeah, you know, hey,
It is what it is.
That's the ticket comes with it.
So, you know, Herbert, I'm very, very excited for the context here of our background. I remember meeting you for the first time. You reached out. You were very proactive. I think you reached out to me on LinkedIn.
Yes.
Or you sent me a note. And I remember, man, like I looked at your background and there was something, not only that you were an immigrant, but there was this fire, there was this grit, this determination that speaks for itself. And I could relate to it, obviously. And then when I saw you, I was like, this is, if not the same what I expected, this exceeded what I expected, right?
Thank you so much.
Because you showed up, you had a commanding presence, and you were so passionate, smile on your face. And I was just happy, man, that you took the time of your day to reach out. I mean, people do it. I have a fortune to meet with folks, but this was something that really made my day at the time. I didn't tell you this until now, but this is the opportunity to do it.
So. Thank you so much. You're definitely flattering me. I really enjoyed the conversation I had with you. It was a pleasure. And I'm so glad I made a new friend.
So here, but tell everyone, I think your story is so exciting. I think inspirational for many, for those that know, and great, but I want to really dive in deep here in your story, in your background. Tell everyone where you're from and, you know, how did you get to the United States?
Good question. So I'm originally from Iran. I grew up in Iran. I grew up in the west side of the country. It's a dual place. There is not that many resources there. The city or the state that I'm from is called Kermanshah. It's still developing. There is a lot of backfire in that city. They don't get that much resources. So overall, development is in a slow slash stagnant growth. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in that part. I went to school there. I was a normal kid. What I grew up with, I had a blessed family to be in, supportive family to help me to grow. So the reason I came to United States is because my dad got a scholarship back in 1970s to come here to study political science in University of Georgia in Atlanta. So he did really well in school. He got a green card and he eventually became citizen. And while I was growing in Iran, he's like, I know a place to take you. And he gave me a biggest gift and he brought me to United States. And I came to United States when I was 16 years old. When I came here, I couldn't speak any English. I didn't know a single person in this country. And it was just those hard days that I had to go through to get where I am right now.
So, you know, I think it's important to highlight, you know, I'm from Poland and I came here when I was 19. You came here when you were 16.
Yes.
I think Poland or some, you know, European countries, we have to help people understand that it's not that easy to come to America in the first place.
No, it's barely impossible. It's like really, really, really close to impossible.
Especially now, exactly. So I know that some countries, I think, have visa. I think it's a allowance or treaty program. Or
like the priority over the other country.
Priority over yes. another country.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it makes me sad because when I see this, when some countries get put on like a back burner or perhaps there's so many petitions, applications for different visas to even come here on a visitor status, that is crazy. So
it is.
And I think, you know, what I think it's important to highlight here, what how many people do you think apply from your country and how many people do you think have the capacity to get here? If you don't have a relative here already.
Oh my, that would even be 10 times more difficult. Unfortunately, there is a lot of bad negativism in when it comes toward Iran and the way the country is. Here, whatever you see in the media, do not believe what it is of the perspective of my country. It's such a great country. There's a lot of extremely smart people, talented, and these people would love to have an international relationship with other countries because at the end of the day, there is only one race and that's the human race. So by that being said but unfortunately, there is a lot of bad things when it comes to immigration, especially Iran and United States. Mm-hmm. Iran is on the bottom of that list, on the priority. They are not even number one or really? Number two or number three. They are at the bottom of that priority. So if you don't have a relative, it's really, really,
really hard.
Even if you have a relative, it is hard because we were about to get rejected from our visa and we were supposed to get our visa. That was like a miracle happened to us.
And you were trying to get a visa based on your dad's status, which is a permanent residency.
Yes.
So it's almost the only way to do it because you're the beneficiary, right?
Yes.
So how come were they going to deny you?
So the problem they were giving us is they're like, your dad didn't pay taxes while being in here, but he did pay taxes.
Yeah.
And they want to say why he didn't pay taxes while not being in the United States.
Yeah.
So they were making all these conflict laws that like, wow, your dad didn't pay taxes. There is no way he could come. You guys come here. And then eventually we give him a lot of paperwork. Like, no, this is not the way you guys think it is. And then eventually this person looked at me when we were in the embassy. He looked in my eyes. He's like, I see this fire in you. I'm going to take this huge risk and issue the visa to you and your parents, to my brother and my mom.
That's
and
crazy.
Then here we are right now.
So you basically, you probably went through a lot of, you know, obviously conversation or you had to provide a lot of evidence and proof in order to, you know, because they were questioning, you know, your dad and the family and probably, and then they always do it.
They always do it. If you do, even if your case has no problem, this is going to come up, put some pen into it just to get that conflict.
Yeah. It's, you know, it makes me sad sometimes because
it is sad.
You know, so many people want to come here and pursue a better quality of life. And unfortunately, you know, in some cases their possibility to get here, not only is it limited, but when they get here, it tends to be even harder to stay.
It is hard. It's so much hard. Like, just because unfortunately, people who are in the United States, they don't know the value of this country. They don't know how much endless opportunities are here to grow, to excel, to eventually have a good life. So these immigrants who come here, they see the value in here. They love it. They fall in love with it. They're like, yes, we want to contribute our whole life into this country for us together to build this country up. But this is not what those ambassadors see over there. They think, oh, these people are just going to come here to do the average thing. No, this country runs by immigrants. All these tech giants runs by these immigrants. So, like, this is no-brainer. Immigrants give so much back to the United States.
So you know, on the note that what you said, how could we, and I see this too, it stuns me in a lot of cases where, you know, not. So, I think people are, overall, on average, very grateful, you know, for what they have. They're appreciative, you know, for the way their life has progressed. But to your point, it bothers me also when I see, in some cases, the lack of appreciation or perhaps lack of realization of the fact that, you know, there are so many tools and resources to really accomplish anything you want over here. And for some reason, I'm not sure what it is, if people just don't want to do it or maybe those are just some bad behavioral patterns that have developed early or, you know, how they were raised? I mean, you never know what that is, but what do you think number one reason could be for folks not really understanding or really grasping what we as immigrants find, you know, almost automatic?
True. I think the huge problem is having too much freedom and having too much options. When a humans overall, just based on the psychology of a human being, when you have a lot of options, you don't know which one to take. And based on just choosing, spending a lot of time. So you're eventually not going to get what you want, or you're eventually not going to get that image you want because you have a lot of options. So just think about this. You go to a restaurant, the menu has 1,000 items and 1,000 appetizers. So you're eventually going to take a lot more time to decide which food you want to take. Or versus you go to another place, only has 3 meals in the plate. So you're going to choose one of those much faster than the first option. So having too much option, I don't think is a good thing. That could lead you in a different path. And that would be what I would think.
That's what you think happens? Yeah. No, I agree. I think there's so much options pertaining to shopping and restaurants. I remember coming here and it was just something that I couldn't really understand how much wealth and just resources are at the disposal, you know, of Americans.
It's infinite. It's generally infinite. People say all the resources are scarcity. There is no scarcity in here. Yeah, it's infinite amount of resources.
It's unbelievable. And I, you know, similar to you, I came here and I said, okay, I would be a fool if I didn't capitalize on what's around me and really make this a better quality of life.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And I think that's kind of the, you know, the nature of us as immigrants, and perhaps, you know, we also, I think, come from a different background. So we have something to compare. And I also have noticed that not a lot of people from here, you know, and there are different reasons for it, but they were not exposed perhaps to different countries, or they couldn't travel maybe as much as we did because of different reasons. So I think as a result of which, that limits their perspective. And then we often tend to, you know, capitalize on things that we see, and unfortunately they don't.
They don't, yeah. That's a bad thing about life. What is it is, when you move here is, you have to something to prove. You know, like, wow, these people speak English. These people already have a job. They already have a place. They already sit. So I have to work so much harder just to catch up to where they are right now. So when you start developing that personality, you're going to start working harder. You're going to be more passionate because you have a lot of things to prove. And when you have things to prove, I feel like you are unstoppable because you know where you're going to go. You know where you're standing and where is the final destination, and you're just going to keep working toward it. Versus these people don't know where they want to go, so they're stagnant where they are.
Yeah, it's kind of a uncertainty perhaps. Yes. Or because of what you said, you know, there's so many options. They're maybe overwhelmed at times, you know, with what this country has to offer, as a result of which they're indecisive and maybe they get lost a little bit too. You know, it's who knows. So sure. I want to know more, you know, what happened when you got here. So you said you were 16, you got here, you didn't know any English, you didn't have any friends.
No one.
So you said you came here with your brother and with your mom, right?
Yeah, so once I came here, we were all reunited. It was my father, my mom, and my brother.
How long were you guys away from each other?
For a year and a half.
A year and a half? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So my brother and my father came here earlier than my mom.
Okay.
My mom did, because there was some paperwork we had to do, make sure we can sell everything and pack up everything and just like basically sell your whole life for an airplane ticket.
For the airplane ticket. Yeah.
That's literally it. After you sell your whole asset.
Talking about perspective, selling all your assets, selling your life.
Yes, basically.
To afford a plane ticket to come to the United States.
Yes. And then after that, guess what? You are on your own.
Yeah.
How you gonna make it? I don't know. Do you believe in miracles?
You'll figure it out.
Literally, like, we all came to United States with $300. When I tell this story,
the whole family?
I personally. A family had a little bit more, not in thousands. Definitely, I wish, but
for sure.
Literally, when I tell people I came to country with $300, they don't believe it. They're like, "What? That's just one night meal." I'm like, "Yes, it's insane. It was really hard days, a lot of hard days. But we had one thing that made us make it. We had faith, and we were reunited."
Yeah.
We were unbreakable chain. Anything happened to us, especially our family, we didn't bother.
Yeah.
We are like, we're going to pass these days. Having that faith that good days will come, made us through it.
That's crazy. Wow. You know, I have chills as you were saying all this to me, but you know, it's so, so impressive. I think it's when somebody listens to this, I think it's initially hard to grasp because you're born here, you know, you kind of live the life that your parents are blessing you with. Mm-hmm. And then you kind of grow up and, you know, your responsibility is to pass the torch forward to the kids that you will have eventually, et cetera. But, you know, you come here, you try to establish yourself. So what happened, you know, from a $300 standpoint, did you just, you know, how did you go to high school, obviously? And then, mm-hmm. you know, you just graduated from college, by the way, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Which I think Herbert is way mature, beyond his age, in my mind, at least.
There is older 24 years old that done amazing. Daddy took their companies public, they done amazing things.
Oh, stop.
Things.
Hey, you're way on the way. So you went to high school first.
Yes.
And, you know, I'm assuming there had to be, you know, did all of you guys had to go to work, or how did you guys manage basically to make all that happen?
So we moved here. We had less than $1,000 in our whole life saving. And we are like, okay, this money gonna run out really, really quick. Yeah. We need to make a business here. So we didn't know how to file a business. We didn't know how to even do LLC, how to do taxes, okay. None of this. And in the household, only one person could speak English, which was my dad. No one else could speak English. We all spoke Farsi, and my dad was the only person. So I remember the day we all were sitting down, and we were just brainstorming, what are we going to do? How are we going to make it in this country? And always had... So personally, always had ideas. Like, hey, let's start this business. It's just in my blood. Like, let's do this. All this brainstorming all these ideas. And my mom's job in Iran, she had a kindergarten. And we were like, why can't we start a home care kindergarten? We get kids and my mom will take care of them here. And we will get like, let's say $20 an hour for taking care of those kids. We were like, we pitch it to some of these Persians we knew here. They're like, oh wow, that's really smart, I'll bring you my kids. I'm like, bingo, this is what we will do. We will start a kindergarten in our house.
Oh my god.
So literally all I remember, I opened up my laptop, I went on a Word, and I made a flyer. We take care of the kids, $20 an hour, this is a phone number. The most simple, ugliest flyer you can ever think in your life.
Yeah.
So I printed like 2,000 or 3,000. And I started putting in people's mailboxes. I didn't know you cannot touch people's mailbox. Yeah. That's illegal. You're not supposed to touch people's mailbox, but I did it. So we went to all the apartments, and guess what? Next day we start getting phone calls. Hey, I want to bring my kids. I live like 2 blocks away from you. And we're like, okay, bingo, bring it here. We're like, so after 2 or 3 months, we had around 12 to 13 kids.
Wow.
My mom was taking care of them while I was in school.
So you were... were you leasing that home that you were, because I can imagine you probably had to run out of space.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we were leasing it. One of my uncle co-credited it, so he co-signed the house.
Wow.
Yeah, and then just we like fight and tears, we got a house, we got a small house, and we were taking off the kids there.
That's crazy.
It is.
So that was the beginning. So then you go to what high school did you go to?
I went to Plano East Senior High School.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were going to high school. Were you outside of school, were you helping with all the kids' duties and responsibilities?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was taking it off. I was doing the book management. I was doing the accounting side of it. And it just felt like, now thinking about it, I'm like, how in the world we didn't get caught? It was so wrong. Like, we didn't have a business filing. We didn't have...
You just kind of did it like a freelancer.
Yeah, like a freelancer. Like, come in, we got you.
Come in, we got you. Yeah. Well, it's the true, you know, I think it's the true... the immigrant way.
It is.
If you don't have a way, you find it.
You find a way. And it worked. It genuinely worked.
That's amazing, man.
So I was doing that. And then while I was in Plano East, I was playing tennis. Mm-hmm. So I was in a tennis team. I made a lot of great tennis players and I made a lot of great friends during being part of that club. So I was taking care of that, coming home, making sure everything was okay, talking to the parents. We'd like a soup. By that time, when we had the kindergarten, I could barely speak English. I could communicate. I would understand it, but I couldn't speak back with them. So I would just take care of it, make sure everything's fine. And we did it for like 2 years.
Wow.
We did it up till I graduated from high school. By that time, we were profitable day one. Because cost for us was literally, we had no cost.
Yeah.
Generally, like talking about the cost, it was no cost.
Well, you just, I guess you provided some toys and time for the kids. Yeah, like, you just kept them busy, played games. And, yeah. That is wow.
It is. I remember the day we went to Goodwill and we bought 1,000 toys for like $5. We are like, okay, now we're in business. This is real. Like,
talking about a true a way to do something, you know, and hustling. That's the definition of that. Yeah. If anything is. So what happened, you know, to follow? Kind of you're in high school, you have this, you know, baby care service, yeah, baby basically. Care. Is that still going on or
no? It's not. I hope, thanks to God, it's not going on. Otherwise, IRS
would be in trouble. Yeah, you would be in trouble. Yeah, yeah.
So we shut that down after 2 years. By that time, when we finished high school, me and my brother finished high school. We could speak English. We were perfectly fine, and we were like, okay, now let's get a real job. After my first job was, I was a salesman. I got a job in LA Fitness as selling membership.
Very cool.
And I loved it. I love selling. I love every aspect of sales, communication, storytelling. That's me.
Yeah.
And after 3 months, I was top 10 salesman in the whole United States for LA Fitness.
After three months,
yeah. I sold so much membership. It was like crazy.
What did you do? Like, what type of strategies did you utilize to be so effective?
Honestly, there was no strategy. I was the skinniest guy in the gym. Like, compared to other salesmen, they all were ripped, like, buff, like, looking. Like, I was, like, the skinniest man in that whole gym. But I sold most membership than out.
Was it primarily on a walk-in basis, or you made calls, or you went business door to door? How did you manage to
every to opportunity do that? I did. So for example, like, I would walk in the gym,
yeah,
and I would see, for example, who's not using the machine in the right way. So I would go talk to him. I would sell him a personal trainer. So I would tell him, hey, where is your wife doing? How's your, for example, where is your husband? He's like, oh, my husband doesn't like to come to gym. I'm like, give me his number. Then I would talk to him, like, yeah, I'll talk to Ashley. Ashley's so amazing. Ashley's alone though here. You need to be here. And they're like, okay, I will sign up. Anyway, I could sell a membership. I did door to door. I did all the tactics. But what I did is, what I learned in sales is, it's not really what you're selling. Yeah, everyone's selling a phone. Everyone's selling a gym membership. Everyone's selling a contract. It's not really what you sell. It's you sell yourself. And if those people want to buy you, bingo, you got that sale. And that's the first lesson I learned in sales. You don't sell, you sell yourself.
That's very wise, man. I think what you just described, that's what I saw day one when I saw you. That tenacity, determination, you know, again, the level of hustle. And I'm not surprised. I mean, I would say I am a little bit, perhaps, what you just told me, because top 10 in the United States, LA Fitness is a big business.
It's a huge business.
How many locations do they have?
Oh my gosh, I have more than 130 locations.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's a lot. And each location has 6 or 7 salesmen.
And 3 months, you know, and a lot of probably people just kind of wait until customers come in the door and they walk them through the membership. No, I mean, I'm not sure what the dynamics are really. Yeah, but
that's how it is. Really, it is. Those people were waiting for people to walk in. And bad thing it is in the sales is it goes by priority. So if a person comes in and that's not your sales, you're not gonna supposed to get that person.
I see.
So he has a list. Everyone waiting. There's a wait list.
So what happened, you know, after LA Fitness? What did you do then?
After LA Fitness, I realized I could sell. I'm like, wow, I'm good at this. This is not an easy thing. I talked to my dad and I told him, so during LA Fitness, that was my freshman year of high school. That was my freshman year of college. And while being in college, I realized one thing, because why are you in college, especially in the United States? All you hear in your undergrad days is find a job, get an internship, find a job, get an internship. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't want to be an intern. I don't want to work for a corporate. I knew that. I don't know what part of me told me that do not chase the corporate path. Nothing wrong with it. It's an amazing place. Yeah. There's a lot of learning. You meet a lot of connections. And overall, there is a lot of good things on it, just taking that corporate path, because you are not responsible for this company. You are an employee there and you don't take that much risk because everything's fixed for you. And for some, which is most, that's amazing. But for something in me, didn't want to take that. I'm like, I don't want to do corporates. I want to build my own company. And during that time, I was fascinated with this new startups coming out. During my time, it was like Snapchat just came out and became the biggest Silicon Valley success. Tinder came out, Bumble came out, Robinhood, the trading app came out. I'm like, I could build one of these, but I didn't know how to code. I didn't know a single thing about technology. And I'm like, if I work around it, maybe I can get my head into that field. Yeah. During that time, during my freshman year, I was teaching tennis. I was a tennis coach. I had a lot of clients. I was just making bank there because you charge a lot of dollars per hour. I was charging $50 an hour and I had 10 clients on a weekend. So like, and that was paying well. Like I was so happy with the income, the cash flow from that freelance gig I had. And one of the dad's coach, one of the daughters I was coaching, he was a developer. So we became good friends with him. His name is Krishna. Hey, Krishna, if you're hearing this, what's up, man? I'm going to send this to him. And he was a developer. Uh-huh. And we talked to him. I was like, hey, I want to get into the app world. Would you help me out? He's like, if you do this thing, I will do it. If you take care of the business, I will take care of the code for you. You don't have to. Do not involve me in the business side. I will do the tech. You do the business. We have a deal. I'm like, wow. All right, bit. Like, that's all I need. Yeah. Just do this. I got it. So he taught me a lot. He mentored me a lot about what is technology, like how do you build a tech startup? And then I got so much more into it. And after, it's just a snowball effect. You learn. And then just that tiptoeing point that when you fall, then you get bigger and bigger. He just helped me there, made me fall, and then bingo. I got bigger and bigger. I learned more about the field, and that's how the rest is history.
Yeah.
The rest is history.
So was this, you know, the surfboard from the beginning?
No, this is not that. This is Glasspa. Glasspa was a mobile app that you could rate your friends. So
So you and Krishna had an agreement in place and said, okay, we're going to launch this mobile app.
Yes.
And you said you're going to rate your friends.
Yes.
Based on what?
Like, okay, so good question. This was a wild idea where we were working on it. So Glasspa was a mobile app that you could rate your friends just the way Yelp is for people.
Yeah.
So I know you, Tomas, right? I go to the app, I would rate you 1 to 5 and write a review of based on your personality. We had three Krishas, personality and work connection and just a friendship connection. Okay. So based on those three things, you would get a rating. And that was the whole idea. Super simple. Super easy.
I'm curious, what was your premise behind it? Was it, you know, to find some commonalities? Because I see people would probably judge immediately and say, oh, you can't rate humans.
Oh, no, you cannot. We heard that 10,000 times.
You heard it 10,000 times.
You're like, humans are not objects. You cannot rate people. You're like, oh my gosh.
But from an outsider perspective that doesn't know much about it, I feel like, okay, if this actually existed and, you know, you could probably run some queries or you know, search filters based on, it's kind of like dating these days, right?
It is like dating, because back then when we had this, dating wasn't as hot as popular, it is in 2019. Yeah. Like even Tinder went through a lot to develop their idea, to develop their market fit.
Yeah.
Tinder went through a lot. So like at the same time when it came to us, to be honest, we did it just to do it.
We had
no idea. Like I had no background in tech. I had no background even in finance or how to even pitch it to investors. We just did it just to do it.
Just to learn.
I mean, to learn. Yeah. We learned so much from it. And during Glasspa, I started a little bit coding too. So I started to understand like what is computer science? What is all these logics and algorithms that runs this program? So that was a good thing. I'm glad we didn't continue pursuing it. We learned a lot from it. Mm-hmm. And I took a while, 3 or 4 months break after leaving Glasspa. And I was just searching around. I was like, okay, I know one thing now. I need to build the app based on necessity. If people, there is no need for my application, no one's going to come to my app.
Sure.
So that's a lesson I learned in Glasspa. So during the second startup I founded was a challenge. And it wasn't a mobile app that you could challenge your friends. So for example, like I would challenge you to chug your coffee, for example. Then you would record yourself and then you would challenge another friend.
Which is something that especially a lot of young people do.
Oh, a lot of people do.
Not only that, but adults. I mean, you go to bars, people, you know, beers or whatever. And in college, especially when friends have fun and go out, I mean, I can only imagine what type of challenges they were inventing.
It is. So you get all these challenges. So that was the idea of the mobile app. So we worked on it, we built the first prototype, and I was just Googling on Crunchbase. I was just on Crunchbase finding investors who invest in social media / entertainment site. And we founded this VC, venture capitalist, name was Felix. And Felix, back then, he used to live in Dallas. So we were super excited. We were extremely passionate. This was me and one of my other co-founder. Mm-hmm. And we were extremely passionate to pitch it to him. We were like, once we pitch to him, we're going to raise millions. Like, we were like, so naive. Like,
For sure.
Oh my gosh. Like, thinking about back then, we didn't know a single thing about like venture capitalists and how they work. We were like, oh, this is about to be it. So we go to the Starbucks. We met Felix.
That was with your challenge.
Second challenge app.
Okay.
And Felix kills us there. Felix, do you play Tekken? You know, it's like finish them.
Yeah, of course.
That was what...
Like Mortal Kombat. Yeah,
Mortal Kombat.
Back like, in the old days.
Yeah, finish it.
Yeah.
That's what he did to us. He's like...
KO.
Yeah,
KO,
he's like... Yes, yeah. He's like, do you know who I am? You're wasting my time on this app. I don't even like the design. This is worst of the worst pitch I've ever heard. And we were so nervous pitching it to him too. That didn't go well. Put it this way. Felix even talked to us after.
So he completely just burned you guys, I guess. But yeah. I'm assuming that was a big lesson for you guys.
Yeah, yeah, huge lesson, because he taught us one lesson. I'm so glad what Felix taught me. You're not solving a problem. That's during that one pitch, he was just keep telling us this, and we were trying to answer it in a different way, but we didn't really know what is he saying. What problem are you solving?
Yeah.
And that's such a simple thing to think. But actually doing it, what problem you actually solving, is a hard thing.
Yeah.
It's really hard. And that's what he tried to tell us, what problem are you guys solving? And we didn't solving no problem. So we went home that night, we were like, brutally beat it, and we're like, this is crazy, like, is Felix is mean, blah 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 blah. And my co-founder Varun was like, no, Felix is actually right, we are not solving a problem. Let's genuinely, for the third startup we will do, let's solve a massive problem. Let's solve a problem that a lot of people faces by every day, and no one even know what that problem is. So we did a lot of research. We did a lot of work. Like, we went to the malls. Like, I literally remember the days I used to go to Galleria Mall and just asking people, if there was a mobile app, what could it be to save your life, to help you improve your life? And that's not going to work either, because everyone has a different problems. And people tell you, I wish I had this app that could make me go from here to China in 2 seconds. Well, that's not realistic.
No, of course. No, but just the fact, I want to applaud you here, because, I mean, going to the mall and just interacting with strangers, which is coming back to your babysitting days and LA days, LA fitness days, when you were selling memberships and challenging wives to bring their husbands back to the gym.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's an awesome thing. Not many people would do that. So you go to the mall and ask people for feedback.
Yes.
I can guarantee you that not many people, you know, would even, I don't want to say think about it, but it has to come from within.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? I will probably decide to stay at home, and I'm going to launch a survey to people because it's probably more convenient, so they do it on an electronic basis.
No one's going to fill out surveys. Literally, SurveyMonkey just announced it. 80% of their survey is literally fake. Because
really?
People do not, like, ask yourself truly.
Yeah.
Or anyone listening to this podcast right now, how many of the surveys do you actually genuinely answer it and not skip through it just to finish it?
True.
You see, like 99 out of hundreds probably just go straight just to get done with it. Like, who's going to read 5 paragraph just to answer yes or no? That's
of course.
The way it frames is just not going to work. So we knew that. We knew that problem. People lies on their survey, or they don't care.
So that's why you felt like the in-person interaction will provide you with more, you know, authentic real-time feedback.
Yeah, and that was generally true, because we did the hard work. We tell them, we made them a scenario, we made a simple case. We're like, hey, what would that be, or what would that problem be? We even went to a lot of police officers. I went to Plano Police Academy because I was thinking maybe software is not the past. Maybe I should get into Harvard. And I went to this police academy. I would ask polices, like, hey, what device, if I had for you, would improve your life?
Mm-hmm.
It would make your job safer, easier. And I was just start getting datas and datas and datas. But even that, again, is really hard to mix all these datas, all this big, massive amount of things you have turned into a single company. That was hard. So I kept trying, knocking on different doors. What would the next startup be? And while I was thinking and brainstorming, I was getting genuinely frustrated by this thing. I didn't know what is going on nearby. I'm like, okay, I'm sitting here, like genuinely, let's say I'm sitting here. What is going on downstairs? Like, what is going on 2 miles down the way? And it wasn't any way. It was no platform that would genuinely show you what's going on around mm-hmm. you in a small radius, especially the small radius. That's yeah. where the selling
the point closest, is. The closest, yeah.
The closest to you. And it was no platform, no website, nothing solves to see what's going on nearby. And that triggered my idea. I'm like, maybe there is a room there. And we did more researches on it. Like, for example, like we know the problem, which is not knowing what is going on nearby. The hardest part was the solution. How are you going to solve it? Are you going to hire 1,000 people sitting there in the corners and just continues texting to this platform? Yeah, what is this is happening? Just like
feeding
the contents. So there was a lot of ways to solve this. We're like, why can't we just record it and post it to the app? You're like, okay, that's interesting. That's a simple idea and doesn't take that much coding either. And is cheaply compared to other alternative ways to do it. And that was the surfboard version one. You would record a video, post it, everyone nearby could see it. And we added more social features like upvotes or likes or direct message. And we were solving a problem.
Wow. So help everybody understand, you know, is Surfboard, obviously that's your company, that's the app that you're currently, you know, have designed, developed and deployed for the benefit of others. So you said there was a version one. What version are you on right now?
So as I'm talking to you right now, we're working on version two. Version two is going to have a lot of more features. We are genuinely, we got insane amount of good feedback on version one, what we could improve, what to leave, what to add on. So we got a lot of good data and we are developing the version two right now.
So help everyone understand. I'm really fascinated with what you guys did there. Especially, you know, at your age, what you guys, you know, and I think that just, again, that's a byproduct of your upbringing, so what you went through. You said you don't want to work in corporate, and now you just said, you know what? I'm just gonna partner up with some folks and develop an app that will help other people. So, you said that the app helps people understand. It provides them with footage with what's going on nearby. So can you share us some examples? Are those pictures, videos?
Yes.
Can you tell us the whole premise? Mm-hmm.
So let me walk through what the application does. So you go to App Store, you download Surfboard, and you open up the app, right? Mm-hmm. There is a quick sign up to your profile. You make your nice picture and all. You put your interest bio. After you get to the app, the main frame is, you will see a camera there. So let's say, for example, you are in a Drake concert or you are at this art museum and you want to record what is going on, or let's say there is an event there, or there is this show is happening, anything worth to share, put it this way, mm-hmm. is happening. You go to the camera, you record it, you post it to Surfboard. Now everyone nearby who are 1 to 15 miles away can see that video and engage with it.
Okay.
Engagement comes from upvoting the video. We call our like upvote, and we have downvote too. So the upvote is like and downvote is dislike.
Okay.
So the more like you get, you start trending. The app categorizes the video by trending and recent. So recent is the most recent event is happening, and trending is the most popular videos happening. The application is all video based, so there's no pictures. And you post a video and other people nearby can see it. And they could message you, for example, like, hey, Tomas, where is this? Like, let's say this thing right now. Yeah. You could post it to the app. People could message you, be like, hey, I would love to be on your podcast. Yeah. Or like, what is this interview? Or all the stuff, all the questions they would ask.
So what have you found the most successful as far as the trending activity in the area? Or you know, because you mentioned a couple things here. Let's say people at the concert and they post a video on Surfboard. Well, you technically would love, once I see the video on Surfboard, I would love to be at the concert, but I can't because the tickets already sold.
That's true. That's the things we are planning to solve.
So what type of activities, and so I have two questions. What type of activity you found the most trending amongst its users? Because I'm sure you're tracking data. And then two, are you able, I'm pretty sure you are, but are you able to track demographics in terms of your user base?
Mm-hmm.
And what type of users use it the most in terms of age, you know, et cetera?
Those are really good questions. To answer your first question, what kind of things gets the most heat or what kind of content gets the most attraction in the app are usually the videos or thumbnails that has a lot of people in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What we notice is when, for example, you come to the app, you come to the feed, there is a lot of things happening like events, bars, night outs, and you name it. But the thumbnails or the videos that usually have a face of a picture in it, like usually a face in it, that gets the most click. And that tells you about how much about human's behavior and recognition of seeing another face and having something to relate to it too. So that particular video could be an event, it could be a show, it could be anything, or it could be a sports, or it could be anything. But usually the most videos gets the most click are the ones that have a face in the thumbnails.
I see.
Yeah.
Interesting. And what about the demographics group? Are you guys able to track it in any
yes.
capacity?
Average user of Surfboard user is 22 years old.
22.
So our app gets the most use from 18 years old up to 35. And if you put on a standard deviation between age 20 to 25, it's the highest.
Okay. In obviously the app is available in the App Store and on Android devices as well.
Yes.
Or you have both versions.
Yes, both versions.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And do you, as far as availability in across the world in different countries, as long as you have access to a smartphone, you should be able to get an app.
Yeah, we are up to now, we are only in United States stores.
I see. Okay.
Because we want to do here, we want to do US well, and especially we want to do Texas
scale.
Well,
okay.
And then scale, because it's not recommended to see that massive amount of scale in the early days. That's most of this is a good thing to happen to your startup if you're seeing that mass amount of scale in a fast amount of time. But we don't want to go through that in turn, because every country has its own data policy, every country has its own data rules, and there's a lot of regulation sides to think about, especially we are in a data collection side of it too, and we are video based. So it's a lot of regulation into it. We want to scale once we are ready for it.
What are some of the challenges that you think you're facing going forward as you know, working on the version 2 of the app? I think you're working with your app users, collecting feedback, gathering data, analyzing different dimensions mm-hmm. of data, and you extract what people say to you. What do you think are the challenges going forward, and what excites you about it the most?
What excites me the most about it is I'm working on a lot of projects. I love to work on different ideas, and we are going through two phases right now for Surfboard. We are planning to get into hardware and get into IoT part of the business. Mm-hmm. That's a whole different department we're planning to add, and that's a lot of scalability there. Second thing is we are getting into augmented reality. So those are two massive tech projects we're working on, just working on these different ideas and genuinely building a solid product mm-hmm. from ground level and genuinely giving it to people to see that scalability and see that global success into it. That gets me fascinated the most. What a problem I'm facing right now, and it will be a continuous problem, is quality of the content
mm-hmm.
and what content people use on the app and how good are this content and how relative are in there.
For sure.
So long as we have a good because we know content is the king.
Yes.
When we have good content in the app, like the user engagement goes up by like 300%, 400% mm-hmm. in the app. So we know that if we have good content, we are up to something. And just making sure the quality of the content goes higher, and that's amazing.
How many users do you think you guys have right now across the country? Just curious.
It's kind of hard because we don't track it. We don't look at the user. Our key performance indication is not number of users.
Okay.
It's how many users coming back to the app constantly,
okay.
Like a daily active users.
Oh, yeah. Because, which is smart, yes.
Yeah, because you could have 1,000 downloads But if you have no daily active users, think about the apps, for example, you use. Let's say you use LinkedIn and Instagram most, right?
Absolutely.
Think about how many times this app gets you back to the app on the frequency base. Yeah, you see, that's where the real value is.
I see.
When it comes to us, we have a really high daily active users because these people are really curious to come to the app and just see what's going on around them or make new friends. Everyone uses the app for their own purposes, for their own needs. One person just wants to, for example, come to the app, see if there is anyone wants to play tennis, or versus you come to the app and you just want to find out where are the nearby events happening. So solving different purposes for different users.
Absolutely. So help me understand. I love the LinkedIn purpose, although they don't really have stories. I think they're supposed to deploy it.
They're adding. Everyone adding the stories.
Everyone adds the story. So it is my understanding, my wife's cousins, you know, they're either graduating high school or they're kind of in a teen college age. And they love Snapchat, obviously, and that story type of format or perhaps interactions with your peers, with your friends. Then you have Instagram stories, and then Facebook just, you know, I don't know when they added the story.
Yeah, they do what they do.
So everybody has this story deal. Deal meaning functionality of the app. So how do you think you can position yourself from the competitive standpoint to attract users to come to your app versus those that obviously have been already established scale.
So all those apps you mentioned, Snapchat and Instagram, those apps are for existence friends. Snapchat and Instagram built for friends, and their idea is you to keep up with existence friends. Versus Surfboard is, we are not a social media app, we are a location-based app. And as we work toward the company and as we work toward our mission and statement and where we want the company to be, we want to genuinely tell the users, we are not a social media app. And because social media has been done, like what else that it is not Instagram doing or Snapchat is doing when it comes to the social hasn't been done. You could add more features into it, but what they're doing the best is getting you connected with your friends, and they're doing a really good job in that. Versus us is we are a location-based app, and we want to show you what's going on nearby. If you are in Dallas, Texas, we want to show you what's going on around you in 1 to 15. If you are in New York, we will show you what's going on around you in the whole New York. Wherever you go, the feed changes. Versus if I'm here right now, I'm using Snapchat. Let's say I go back to Iran, I will still see the same content.
Yeah.
But if I'm on Surfboard, I will see the whole different content.
Gotcha. Okay.
So just getting different type of feeds and getting different type of contents and how much you can learn about your community, that's what we see a longer scalable business toward that versus just keeping up with your friends. Because in one day, the growth for even Snapchat is going through hell right now. The stock is bleeding and they're not doing really well. And Snapchat, Instagram killed them. So even them, you see they're having a huge problem to scale because how much are you going to keep up with your friend? How long this business is sustainable? What if I exactly know what my friends are doing? And usually on average, your friend's doing the same thing every day over. Oh, I'm at my work, or I'm in back-end school, or I'm playing ballet right now, or doing something I did previous. So that loses its excitement and traction.
Gotcha. So you said location-based app. I've recently experienced something similar. I was back at SMU taking some graduate courses, and they had this new attendance feature where they were tracking our attendance based on location. Mm-hmm. So they said you need to have all your location always on, and you know we know when you're in class basically if you have your phone on you, and everybody does. So they called it, I think it's geofence
technology.
Is that what it is?
Yes, yeah. Geofence. The way geofence works is, so that is specific fence, let's call that fence SMU, for example, SMU building one.
Yeah.
So there is a fence, it's not a tangible fence, it's intangible fence. So there is that fence there. So when you enter that fence, they get a notification, for example, like Thomas is here.
Okay.
So that's how that technology works.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm curious, first of all, this is amazing. I feel like,
thank you.
You know, if anyone hasn't met you, I think they should, because I think you're, you know, I already, I think, complimented you in a lot of ways, and I meant what I said.
Thank you.
However, having an application, being, you know, an immigrant entrepreneur with such a great idea, collaborating with other people, and to your point, trying to solve the problem, I think that's very, I don't want to say courageous, but that's, you have to have the guts to do it.
Yeah, but still, I got a long way. Success is a lousy teacher. Success is a long journey that you have to be really patient. And you have to have two things to be successful. You have to be very patient and you have to work hard. Not many people wants to do any of those. To me, success is a long-term game.
Yeah.
And I have to keep playing this until the day comes. Even the moment you are successful, you still have problems. You still have suffering. You still have to do a lot of things to keep it up. So life is a long journey, and success definitely is a long process as well. So I have a long way to go.
How many, you know, I wanted to ask you, I forgot to ask you this question. How many people do you guys have right now how many people you have that help you out?
Yeah.
Part-time, full-time basis, freelancer, whatever.
Oh, if we add freelancers right now, we just partner up with the new agency to work with. So if we add up to those, we have around 12 people.
12 people.
And we have six full-time engineers.
And you had, correct me if I'm wrong,
go ahead.
From the funding perspective, you had a seed round, is that correct?
Yes, we closed a massive amount of seed round. Our investors are really nice. They were really nice to us. They helped us out. And even them, they saw a big opportunity in me. They saw great, or even my investors always tells me, he's like, I saw a fire on you. I haven't seen it in anyone else. And that was...
See, this is it.
Thank you.
I'm not a VC guy. I'm not an investor. But I had a feeling, because, you know, when I met you and when you meet Herbod, if you get a chance to meet him again, there's just something that is, there's unique. Not only the fact that you're an immigrant, but you have this passion, this smile. I think this warmth of your personality comes out. And then I think what you just did is just, I mean, obviously you had an idea, you learned from your mistakes. You had one app, second app, and then now you're on the third. And, you know, I mean, to me, it's a no brainer. If I had the money, I'd be like, hey, Herbod, what do I sign?
Thank you. You're just flattering me.
So that's fantastic. I'm very excited for you, man. And so what do you think is, you know, outside of, you know, working on the second, version of the app, what's next for you guys? What do you think the listeners can expect from Surfboard and from you?
Very good question. Any of the users that are listening to this right now, is just be patient with us. There's a lot of things we want to show to the users. What our core of Surfboard is innovation. We have a lot of amazing features. I'm telling you, the features that no human being ever done it. Features that is a whole different way for you to express yourself. What we value at Surfboard is self-expression. Because when you are at an event, you're expressing yourself. When you're talking to your friends, you're expressing yourself. Anything you do is a self-expression. And we are working and we are innovating features toward that path. And so if you are a user, stay with us and just see how much value you can get out of the application. As long as a user gets value from the app, I did my job. I'm happy,
job.
Obviously.
The app is free right now? No?
Forever will be free.
So how are you over time, as I think this is going to be amazing as you scale and we see your progress. How do you anticipate, you know, to get a profit from this? And you know, that makes me curious.
Yeah, we actually, it's nice to say it here. We're actually about to hit profit less than a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we are getting into hardware, and our hardware is going to generate revenue for us. So that the hardware, the piece or the technology will be available less than a year. We are working on a crazy amount of hours into it. So that's a huge project we're working on, and that will make us profitable less than a year.
So you have the app, but then you're also, is this hardware?
It's a Surfboard product.
I see. So is this something that you are, what's the word, putting a patent on, or this is something that would be proprietary or, yeah. Or it is? Okay.
Yeah, the device is definitely has this IP part comes with it and gotcha. The patent parts comes very with cool. it too. Yeah.
So you I think that speaks volume because you add a lot of dimension to it. You're not just focusing on the app.
Yeah.
But I think developing a product first and foremost and potentially other apps could see it or other, you know.
Oh, yeah. There is a lot of scaling and grossing potential out there. And that's for us, to the investors, for the whole team, that was the best path to take the company. I'm really excited to see what's next for it.
That's awesome. So if there was, one or two or three things if that the listeners could help you with, and Surfboard and, you know, your staff, your fellow employees, what they could help you with?
Honestly,
outside of downloads, obviously.
Yeah. beside that is, to be honest, if what I value the most is negative feedback. And yeah. negative feedback to me has endless amount of value.
Yeah.
Because a user has to remove that nice, because everyone wants to be nice.
Of course,
and everyone yeah. wants to build good connection. But for a person to remove that nice filter and tell you his honest opinion, that's a lot of work and caring there. So if you can tell me your negative feedback and what especially you don't like about the app, you did your job. I'm happy.
Gotcha. Okay. So if anybody is listening right now, please do here but a favor. Download the app. Play with it. I don't think it's going to take a lot of your time. If you don't want to do it, perhaps your kids could. And, you know, if you let them, of course. And I think here but would love feedback. And I always say the same thing, you know, about this podcast, which became kind of a hobby, a side project opportunity to give back. But to your point, without feedback, it's easy to compliment folks. But I think it's that much harder to provide, I don't want to say bad feedback, but like constructive. Like, to me, I'm not afraid.
No, because you will improve it. No, I'm not afraid either. Exactly. So if you don't like this part, tell me why so I could help it and
exactly,
improve
exactly.
it.
Exactly, exactly.
Same goes to yours too.
So definitely, send here but a message. I will make sure to leave his LinkedIn profile and contact information so you guys can connect with him and provide feedback. I'm so happy. I'm proud of you, man. You're doing.
Thank you so much. I'm proud of you too.
You're doing. Thank you. You're doing great things. I think UT Dallas, has developed a great student, a great entrepreneur. I know that school very well. I have some friends there working, in various departments, and I think they pride themselves in entrepreneurship and really and growing internally their entrepreneurial power and bandwidth. And I think you are a great byproduct of that force. So hopefully once they hear this and once they see you progress and prosper, they're going to be that much more proud and excited.
Cheers to that. Thank you.
So thanks so much for being here, Herbert. And, I look forward to really, seeing you prosper and grow in years to come.
It was a pleasure. We'd love to come back here again.
Cheers. Appreciate it, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Tomas Show. Please subscribe and share.
What's up, guys? Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode with Herbert Bigvand. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We had a lot of fun during this recording. I was very, very impressed with his story, and I think he's barely scratching the surface on his entrepreneurial journey. Please send me a message. I've been receiving a lot of great feedback from you guys. Really blessed and thankful for all your messages. You guys are enjoying the podcast, which means a lot to me. However, if there is any constructive feedback that you guys also have, don't hesitate to contact me. This is definitely something that I'm working on, that I'm continuously working to improve. I want to grow, as a host. I want to grow with you guys, with my guests, with my audience. So please don't hesitate. I would really very much appreciate that. Thank you so much again for listening, and looking forward to catching up with you at the next episode on next Monday. Cheers.